Welcome to the DL.
This is our fourth to last show. Josh Circle is officially taking over. How are you?
So sad to see you go, but very happy to be here right now.
You are also going. So before we get to Masters stuff, let's do a little bit of sort of housekeeping for all of us. By the way, the triumvirate of quitting, Bethlehem Scholes of Free Darko. Free Darko is closing up too. He's going to be on later. So it's just going to be a quit fest today. But before we get to that, and before you and I talk a little bit of golf, you had me on your show last week, and we got into a very, very interesting and in-depth conversation. You had yet to announce that you were also leaving with Leather. So I have a feeling that some of those questions for me were actually geared toward yourself. So I want to get into that. But explain your announcement.
Yeah, to some extent. I've been the managing editor with Leather for 2 years, a little over 2 years. Obviously, I took over the site when Matt Ufford, the founder of the site, went on to do Warm and Glow, the terrific TV blog in the Up Rocks Network. And I had done the site for over 2 years. I'd either written or overseen about 3,000 posts during my time there. Kind of felt like I'd done all I could do in terms of what I was doing day to day. I mean, it was a full-time job. I was working at the site all day, and I felt like it was time. You know, at some point, you realize you can only reinvent the wheel so many times. If I did that at all, to be quite honest, and you know, I was eager to sort of move on and see what else is out there now that I have a little bit of an online following, a little bit of an audience, and tackle some of the other things on the bucket list that I really wanted to take part in.
All right, so that's the first question that we'll get to, because when you announced this, you put it out on Twitter, and immediately everyone thought, oh my God, Zirkle got fired. And you shot back, yes. No, this is amicable. You're leaving on your – but the thing is, and trust me, I'm in the same boat as you. When you just stop doing something, especially in your case, something that pays you for nothing that doesn't pay you, people right. Put up a flag. So, I mean, God bless you if you're financially able to do this, but is this a concern for you that you've now eliminated your safety net?
The short answer is no. Let me step back and clarify here. I'm not leaving the site fully. As you did say, I am stepping down as managing editor on good terms with the Up Rocks people. Brandon Stroud, obviously, who's come on of late and done a terrific job. He's brought the dugout back, done some really neat posts with the minor league mascots and also some pro wrestling recaps. And he's brought fun back to the site in a way that I wasn't able to do of late. And really, just for me, it seemed like it was a good time to step aside. You know, and again, I was not fired. I was really sort of plotting an exit for some time, but with Brandon coming on and kicking ass the way he did, the stars sort of aligned, and I will be part of the site. I'll probably do maybe 10 or 15 posts a month, and obviously I'll still be writing on KSK. I'm under contract with KSK through October, and as far as that goes, I'm not leaving the scene completely, so there will still be money coming in, and I'm going to be able to tackle other projects that will be varying degrees of profitability, let's say.
This is a loaded question, because you obviously are stepping down from running the site, but you're still going to be closely affiliated, as you mentioned. So I don't think you're going to answer this. You have never pulled a punch, so I think you will answer this truthfully, but I think that I know what your answer will be, and I will ask it with prefacing by saying that. Is the general sports blog dead? Does it not work? Maybe not dead, but does it not work in the same construct as 2 years ago when With Leather was born, as what Deadspin used to be or the Big Lead used to be? Does that idea no longer exist?
Yes and no. I think part of it is, you know how like when you're a younger person, maybe 16, 17, and you started doing something that was fresh and neat and enjoyable, and all your friends sort of rallied around that, and then your parents found out about it, and then your parents started doing it. And they did it a little bit better with the resources that they had. And it wasn't quite as cool. And sort of like the energy and the buzz that was incorporated into that type of thing was gone. I feel like that's where sports blogs are now.
Are you recapping American Idol? What just happened here?
No, I'm just trying to draw an analogy here for you, Dan.
No, I know. And you're absolutely right. It's almost – I mean, we talked about this on your show the other day, so we're recapping a little bit of that if people listen. But it is a different world in that Everything is either you can't do it yourself anymore. You can't start a blogger site at blogspot.com and succeed. I mean, you might, but I don't think anyone's going to do that anymore. Like, just people aren't going to even try that anymore because it just makes more sense to be an active tweeter and then hopefully somebody's going to. I mean, there's got to be people hiring. You can start your own team-specific site with the goal of getting joined, you know, by SB Nation or by one of the other blog networks. Blogwin and other places like that are always gobbling up sites to make money off of them. But I think from just a general sports standpoint, I have a feeling they're there, and nobody else is going to be able to show up. I mean, it's you guys. Like I said, Deadspin, the Big Lead, SB Nation obviously has become more like ESPN than like a sports blog, more just sort of a news house. But I don't think anyone can come out of that. I mean, I sort of tried in a way, but with a sports media bent, and I realized nobody cares what my opinion is anymore. So why am I banging my head against the wall if nobody's even going to call an ambulance for me?
Well, you know, as you said, we talked a little bit on my show about how noisy the environment is now, and there are just so many people involved and so many other blogs that it's difficult to be discovered there. Twitter is sort of a double-edged sword because you can go on Twitter and be funny. People will follow you. People will find you. And you can retweet somebody, which if you're good at what you do, if you have like good opinions, and it's not to say that you don't, Dan, but I'm saying like there are people out there that I'll just follow somebody if they have like one funny retweet. I mean, the opportunity cost for me following somebody like that is very, very low.
Right.
But I think what's happening now, like the commitment to sports blogging, I think is obviously taking a turn for worse. I think part of that is because some people did get paid, but a lot of people didn't get paid. You know, and 4 or 5 years ago, you were comfortable doing something like that for free. But as you mentioned, and I'm sure other people have felt, hey, these other guys are getting paid. I'm just as good as they are. Why aren't I getting paid? And it's frustrating.
Right.
And it's sort of like sit in front of the computer and bang your head up against a keyboard for months or years at a time and trying to come up with that funny post that's going to get retweeted or followed on Dig or followed on Fark or anything like that. It's torturous. It really is torturous.
Yeah, and look, I don't mean to sound, well, screw it, it's my show. I mean, whatever.
It's your show, and everybody knows that you've been sort of a grumpy bastard about it, and that's not to say that I fault you at all. You know, some of the things that went on with, you know, the Sporting Blog acquisition really has made me take pause in sort of some of the how our industry is being monetized.
And
right. Is everybody shooting straight? And that's something that, you know, I think if you're looking to turn a profit with your writing, that's something you really have to look at. And it's like anything else, you know, if you put a paycheck to it, like the game completely changes.
Right. And I'm glad you brought up the sporting news thing because that's sort of where everything stems from me. And I want to go back to your point of saying everyone was willing to do it for free until people started getting paid. And once somebody else started getting paid, you look at it as a sliding scale. Well, shit, I'm better than that guy. Why the hell is that guy getting paid? Why aren't I? And then everything changes. And for me, it changed when I was getting paid and then I wasn't. And my thought, and this is a conversation I had with Jim Bankoff, and this is a conversation I talked about like 10 times on the show. Jim Bankoff said to me, he was put in the worst position in the world. Jim Bankoff, who's the head of SB Nation, was put in a position where we were told by the people at Sporting News, Jim Bankoff has saved your jobs, and Jim Bankoff was never told that. So when I spoke to him and said, hey, thanks for saving our jobs, he said, I saved what? And I said, wait. And he said, let me get back to you. Sorry about the miscommunication. We can't afford you. That's what I was told. SB Nation. $10.5 million in venture capital 3 months after this conversation happened, I was told by the head of SB Nation, we can't afford you. And look, I mean, Tunison, who wrote there for a while, I mean, eventually they couldn't afford to keep him on or whatever the situation happened with that. I actually don't know all the particulars to that. But I was told that we are bringing in the people who we can't afford. You are not one of them. Sorry. Go find some other work. And I looked around and said, nobody can afford me. And I wasn't making all that much money at Sporting News. But clearly I was getting overpaid for what I was worth in a blog construct. And it's sort of scary when you look at that. Like, holy crap, a company that just made $10 million can't afford me. And then you look at it 6 months later, they have Rob Nyer. They just bought half of Engadget, or at least all the good parts of Engadget. All of a sudden, they don't need me anymore. So in 6 months, SB Nation went from not being able to afford people like me to completely overpricing and not even needing people like me because they've just gone out and gotten the best people in the country. It's weird. It's uncomfortable.
Is that a question?
Yeah, sort of.
No, I'm just kidding. You brought up Bankoff, man. I mean, that guy obviously has been around the block, was involved with TMZ, AOL. And I really appreciate what he's trying to do, you know, with SB Nation and, like, the quality of his operation. Like, I appreciate what he's trying to do. And I think if you're in that spot, like, you have to fire people. And I've contracted guys, men and women, to write for my site. And there have been times where I just had to say, you know, this is not mutually beneficial anymore. And we've had to, like, renegotiate or sometimes even let people go. And it's not fun, but when you're operating on something professionally, that's a fact of life. You know, look at KSK. And this is almost, I don't want to say the exception that proves the rule, because I think that's a stupid saying. But, you know, we have six guys. We all have varying degrees of contributing to the site. You know, everything Drew writes is hilarious. Everything that Mike writes is hilarious, although he gets a lot of shit in the comments for it. And then the four of us just kind of dabble around. And that model somehow has worked for 4 or 5 years. Now, when our contract comes up in November, is that model going to be in place? Or are we going to get, you know, am I going to get an email from Jeremiah saying that they can't afford me anymore? Maybe. Who knows?
Right.
But say, the money changes everything. And this is now an industry that has money in it. This is not like kids playing in the sandbox anymore. There are a lot of people that are trying to make a career out of this. And I would say until recently, I was one of them.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, I was one of them too. And I feel that for my sort of mental health, it made more sense. Look, I think there are a lot of problems with the way that I do the show. And I think there are a lot of problems with the way that I tried to do the site that I was trying to do. And I could never fix them until I just quit. So I think this show might come back at some point. It won't be called On the DL Podcast. It won't be, you know, me and Nick talking. Nick will be a part of it if he wants to be, and you'll be a part of it if you want to be, and whoever else wants to be a part of it will be a part of it if it ever comes back. But it's not going to be the same show. It can't be. And I think that's the same thing that you feel, is when you do something for so long, just by nature of being there, you get taken for granted and it becomes stale. And then you feel stale. And then you don't want to do it. And then when you wake up every day and you don't want to do it and you feel it stale, it's time to just stop. We talk so much on this show. Nick and I talk so much when we talk about television, about how British TV is brilliant. The Office was brilliant because it was 13 fucking episodes long. If they had to stretch that into even a full season, let alone 5 or 6 seasons, that show would have been terrible after 25 or 28 episodes. Terrible. But it's great because it's self-contained. Yet at the same time, we're trying to do the same show every day and be entertaining. I mean, granted, sports sort of moves, so you have different topics to talk about. But at some point, you're telling the same jokes, aren't you?
At some point, and that's kind of like where I felt I was with Leather. You know, it was great. I had a couple guys that I was working for, Brian and Jared, that basically let me do just about anything I wanted, provided I didn't upset sponsors or, you know, get C&D letters from any sort of people. That's unusual for any job. You know, I didn't take walking away from that lightly. But at the same time, you know, before I was blogging, I was working as an analyst, and I decided that, hey, you know what, I'm really going to take a go at this writing thing, and I'm going to do as much as I can with it, as quickly as I can with it. And I kind of felt like I was, coming from that career, I felt like I was sort of like trying to play catch up, and frankly, I still feel like that. And I wondered just how much catching up was I doing. You know, I didn't feel like my writing was getting any better. I felt like I'd sort of maxed out my audience, at least what I could do with Leather. It was time, you know, and just I had so many factors and so many things pointing at me saying, like, it's time for the next move. And I didn't quite have it ready yet. And I was like, you know what, just two more months. And after that, I was just like, you know what, fuck it. It's time. We've got to jump now. And it was almost just like, I don't want to, like, look, I'm so grateful for the opportunity I had. And, you know, Matt had every confidence in me when he, you know, basically handed me that job. And so it's not lightly that I say, like, oh, you know, it was so terrible that I just had to leave. No, I felt like it was time to – you don't want to sit in a position like that and feel sorry for yourself and think about how shitty your life is.
Right.
Because it's a great life. It's a good job. And why would I sit there and hog that spot, possibly the detriment of the site, when you have somebody as talented as Brandon Stroud sitting in the wings looking for his shot to run his own site, to run his own blog, and to bring in the people that he wants to bring in? Why not give him that shot?
See, and that's the part that where you I agree with everything up until that, because you know, for somebody, I'm on my own. Like if I don't show up one day, if I have a doctor's appointment or if I have whatever going on in my family,
yeah,
nothing is getting done. For you, you had a network of people, and if you were had to travel or if you had to do other stuff, you had other people that could write for you. So it's in that regard, it's different. But everything else you just said, I mean, it's like I'm talking to myself. I mean, it's exactly how you feel. And I don't mean to sound depressed or depressing to the people listening, but it's just the reality of this is that eventually you look at it like I really, really wanted to get to 600 because I just thought 600 is like the home run thing. You're like, 500 is bullshit now. Like everybody can get to 500, but 600 is the number. And then I'm sitting there at 525 and I'm looking around and I have three doctor's appointments in 2 days for Max. And I said, I might not get to 530. And then I talked to you and I talked to Nick and I talked to Kogod and I talked to a couple other people and I said, I think we're done. I think I'm done. And a bunch of people said, well, get to something. You know, don't just quit today. And that's where we are at 555. And I think that's a nice round number. Who the hell knew that you and Schultz were going to trump me? Schultz is getting shit in the New York Times and with leathers changing hands. And I'm like, oh, don't forget about little old me.
Yeah, you know, Schultz, though, I mean, he's going out with a bang. His second book came out. He had a nice sort of tour with the Blogs with Balls folks. Massive following, massive reverence, not only from his readers, but also our industry. I mean, everybody loves Schultz. You know, it would have been great for me if we could have had, like, a swan song like that. I'm sure you feel that way, too. It doesn't always happen, though. And I don't think there's any shame in that.
No,
I think part of it is like, you know, I think you're taking a break. I think you are going to come back. You know, you'll be on Twitter, and then I'm certain you'll do another podcast. I'm just convinced of it.
I'm changing my Twitter handle, by the way.
To what? To Dan Levy? Dan Levy's out there?
Yeah, there's like 60. How about this? 2 weeks ago, some guy sent me a message on Twitter and was like, dude, how could you be ripping on Connecticut? You're from here. And I'm like, do you know anything about me? I hate Connecticut. I am from New Jersey. Because it was like UConn. Like I worked at Rutgers for 10 years. You think I'm rooting for UConn? And he was like, oh, there's a comedian named Dan Levy. He's from Connecticut. Sorry, I thought it was you. Are you fucking idiot? The thing is on the DL podcast. It's not Dan Levy the comedian.
So you need like a middle initial or some other shit to sort of differentiate yourself. I Googled you just now. You're fourth. And Dan Levy.
That's not bad. Shit.
What do you mean that's not bad? That's fucking awful.
What are you talking about? Fourth?
You know how I'd feel if I Googled myself and I was the fourth Josh Zirkle?
Because your name is Zirkle. You know how many Jewish Levys there are in the world? Dude, Josh, I have on my Facebook page, when I signed up for Facebook, whenever, like 4 years ago, whenever I was late to the Facebook game. So I decided, let's have some fun. I friended every single person on Facebook named Dan Levy. There are 700 of them, I think. I think I have 200 friends named Dan Levy. If I'm fourth, that's awesome.
You should be like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator when he rips out all the Sarah Connors in the phone book. Just knock on doors like, yes.
But seriously, if I'm fourth.
Seriously.
I'm happy about that.
You need to climb the mountain.
Who are the other three? Let's figure this out.
All right. It's the first two are from a comedian in California.
Yeah, that guy's the guy. He's
and there's an IMDb page, which I suspect might be the same dude.
Yeah, it's all him and me. I'm second. I'm not fourth. It's Dan Levy, the comedian, who's Canadian. He's got a wiki page. He's got a Wikipedia page again. And he's got three Wikipedia pages for the same comedian and then me. Oh, no, Daniel Levy, the businessman. Sorry, the chairman of Tottenham Hotspurs, the chairman of their football club. A comedian who's on television and me. I'll take that, Zirkle.
I wonder where Andy Hutchins shows up in the Andy Hutchins Google listings.
Are you thinking about it?
Oh, look at that. He's number one. Wow.
So I'm thinking about changing my Twitter handle to Dan Levy Thinks, because I'm actually going to start a Tumblr that is called Maybe You're Just Underthinking Things.
Wow, maybe.
Because everyone says I overthink things, so my response is maybe you're
Are you
just,
on Tumblr at all?
That's going to be...
I got on it, and I can't figure out what the hell to do with it.
No, I mean, once the show is done, I'm going to dedicate my life to becoming an active tumbler. I mean that in the house. Like, I'm just going to do somersaults in the house, but a little bit online as well.
You're not even number one in Dan Levy thinks. There's something about the Israel of the three Likudniks and a prospect for peace.com web listing.
Well, I have no friends. I mean, I have...
Need to whip up a little black hat SEO and just punch the Dan Levy franchise right in the pants. Make the magic happen. So Alex Blagg, you need to sit down with Alex Blagg. That's what you need. You need to work on your strat.
Josh, I'm disappearing. As at the end of Rockstar, Mark Wahlberg says, I'm taking a piss.
You need to work on that.
No, it's fine. I'm happy about this. I finally feel at peace. Once I get this one post done about the Muppets, which I'll tease now and I'll explain later.
Yes.
I think I'm done. I think that's it. I think I'm going to take a break. I'm going to enjoy my son being one. He turns one on Thursday, which will be the day of our last show. I'll probably cry a little bit when the show's over, and then I'll go about my day.
You should cry on your last show.
I think I will.
You don't have to leave it in, but if you did not cry after dumping like 5 years of your life into this.
It's been a long time. I mean, it has. And we're still taping. And people are probably like, "What the?" By the way, Scholes is going to be next. If people think that this is just a free stream of consciousness. Wait.
I thought we were going to talk about the Masters at some point.
Yeah, let's talk about the Masters real quick. And as a general sports columnist, or as a general sports blogger, I should say, not columnist, I will ask you, was that a good finish to the Masters? Or because no one has ever heard of Charles Schwartzel, is that a bad finish to the Masters?
No, I thought it was terrific. It was a bit of a logjam up at the leaderboard, which I thought was fun. But I will say this, Adam Scott's putter is a war crime.
Yeah, he should be disqualified.
That shouldn't. What do you use? Why don't you use a hockey stick, Adam? I mean, why? Don't make it harder on yourself. I'm not a fan of like putters or any sort of club that braces up against the body. Those were illegal before the club manufacturers got in the heads of the USGA and the Royal and Ancient and had that written in. I think those putters are a joke. I don't care how good a ball striker you are. You need to be able to sink putts. And I have no respect for any player that uses a belly putter or a chest putter, Adam's putter rested on the chest. I think they're a joke, and I don't like seeing people in contention with them. And if I sound like a 90-year-old man with children on his lawn, I don't care.
No, you sound the opposite of that. That's the point. I'm okay with it being on the senior tour. Guys have bad backs. But if Freddie Couples can use a regular – he uses a long putter. But if he could use a regular putter to win the Masters when he did it, then you should be doing that too. The playing field should be – if you want to change the graphite, titanium, all that stuff, fine. But to start letting people use mallets to be putting the ball, it's ridiculous. And again, I still think – and I mentioned Couples. If you want to use it on the senior tour or whatever they call it now, that's fine. But if you play in a regular tournament – that's on the PGA Tour, the Masters, the U.S. Open. If you qualify, you can't use the belly putter. You can't, even if you're a senior tour player, if you want to be in this tournament, you play with the regular. I cannot believe, and I understand they want scoring to be lower and whatever works for people, but you're right, it's a crime. It's a crime that he has now found his stroke by swinging a 20-foot mallet.
It's not just a crime, it's a war crime. He was born in 1980. This guy's barely 30 years old, and you're telling me he can't bend over the ball? It looks like...
No, he can't use his wrist. He's got the yips. He can't putt anymore with his wrist. So by using the belly putter, you take the wrist out.
It's the Chris DeMarco grip, too, that overhand, which is fine. You know, hey, if that works, great. But you know what? Use a real putter. If you can't bend over the ball, then you can't play golf. And I don't care if you're 30 or 65.
All right, so going back to the winner of this tournament, Charles Schwartzel. Now, here's the thing about this. I mentioned this guy's the most anonymous player in the world, and somebody wrote back, no, he's actually pretty competitive on the European Tour. So it sounds sort of myopic of us to not know who he is, potentially. He did qualify for the Masters. He's got to be pretty good.
He's never done anything in America. Why should we have heard of him?
Exactly. I feel the same.
I don't know what he's done in South Africa. Do it here, buddy. This is the grand stage. This is where it matters.
Well, he did. He did do it here. And people who I follow on Twitter, former athletes, guys like Taylor Twellman, who are in the media now, are upset. Right. Oh, that finish sucked because a guy I've never heard of won. Why can't we just accept that it was a really good quality tournament? If that were, I don't know, if that were Chris DeMarco you mentioned, a guy who was a nobody who we had heard of a little bit, who did that, it switched around and that were Adam Scott who won that tournament, it would have been a great finish.
Look at what we had on Sunday. We had five, and I think at one point, six people tied for first. We had an amazing resurgence from Tiger Woods, which nobody saw coming.
Nobody.
And I think that is the takeaway tomorrow more than Schwartzel winning it. We had Angel Cabrera in contention, a former champ. You know, you had Luke Donald with this amazing finish on 18 where he hit the flag stick
twice, basically.
And then chipped in to save a three. I don't know how the hell he did that. And then you had a first-time winner, you know, and I'm not one of those guys that, you know, and maybe Shane and JR, but I'm not, that judge a major based on, like, the names on the leaderboard. But, I mean, you don't want the same guys winning. I mean, that's how you build a new star. That's how new stars are born. And this, I think Schwartzel's only, like, 26.
Yeah, 26.
He just won his first Masters. I don't understand, like, how that's not good enough for some people.
I think it is. I think the problem is that we get enamored. By the way, on your cavalcade of things that were great about this tournament, you forgot the Rory McIlroy collapse, which I want to get to in 1 second. Because that's as epic as anything that happened. But before we get to that, the thing about Schwartzel is I think it's buyer beware at this point. We tried to convince ourselves that Zach Johnson was going to win three or four majors in his career. We tried to convince ourselves that Trevor Immelman had the game to win a couple of majors other than the Masters that he won. I don't think anyone thought that about Louis Oosthuizen, who won the British. And now you get another sort of anonymous South African winning a major, and you think, are any of these guys going to win more than one? And the history of golf is built on guys winning three, four, and five majors. So as great as it is, to your point, it's also not great in a way because you hope one of those four names that I mentioned or five names that I mentioned does turn it into a run of good proportion, not even epic proportion, but wins a couple more majors and is relevant. Because some of these guys just disappear, and then they're good players who have a green jacket, and you're like, Jesus, I can't believe that guy's got a Masters.
Well, so what? I mean, you know, winning majors is hard, and that's something in this sort of post-Tiger environment that we forget about. You know, a guy putting together four good rounds at, you know, the PGA or the Masters or U.S. Open, I mean, that's hard. That's difficult to do. And you know what? The next time we hear of Charles Schulzen or whatever the hell his name is, I would say that we'd remember that name, but I just disproved that point right there.
I think you mentioned Charles Schulz, the creator of Peanuts.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of. That's what his name kind of reminds me of.
Absolutely.
But I'm saying that, you know, these guys, I mean, winning one major, I think, should be good enough. And
it's good enough for them, you know.
Hey, seriously.
It's better than Sergio Garcia's ever done. Better than Adam Scott's ever done. Better than Luke Donald's ever done. I mean, these are guys you heard of, and they haven't won majors. So, by the way, so let's get to Rory McIlroy. My favorite thing about this Rory McIlroy, and look, I feel bad for the kid. But and if you hit a couple bad shots, you hit that tee shot on 10 that goes into the house. That's whatever. You hit a bad shot, but he panicked the rest of that hole and the rest of that round. Fine, he got the yips on putts, but when you make poor decisions, that's a choke. If you hit a bad shot, you feel bad, but when you start making ridiculously terrible decisions, like trying to get it through three trees and banking it off, that's just dumb. That's the stuff you and I do. So I almost feel like he totally choked. He shot 80 when he was leading by four strokes. It's the biggest choke job I can remember, but everyone feels bad for him because he's young. It's inexplicable to me. Why all of a sudden are we now feeling sympathetic for the 21-year-old hotshot? Don't we usually hate those kids when we see them in the bars?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he'd played for Florida State, we'd be riding his ass into the sunset. But no, since he's a golfer and, you know, we can actually identify with him to some degree, then, you know, we have to feel bad. Hey, the guy played great for three rounds. Probably did not get a quality night of sleep last night and came out and just could not maintain the pace. You know, I mean, it's tough. Golf is, people talk about how golf is not a sport, but, you know, it's a mental grind. And, you know, those guys have to do it for four days in a row. And then they got to go out and do it again the next week. So, you know, I don't feel bad for him. I think that was as spectacular of theater as you could ever hope to see. And yeah, the kid lost, but you know what? It's fine. He'll bounce back. Yeah, how much money did he lose from that?
Oh, I think you can't even.
Dan Revell said he lost. If he would have won, he would have had over, obviously, like the $1.44 million purse for first. And I don't think he even finished with 10% of that, which is kind of amazing.
Oh, yeah. Probably like $50,000. We'll look it up. But the most incredible thing of all this to me And I almost felt myself rooting against him and rooting for – I've never rooted for Tiger Woods, I think, in my life. I'm a Phil Mickelson guy. I respect Tiger's game, but I never rooted for him actively until today because, one, it made the story greater. But, two, basically just to stick it to Dan Wetzel. And I like Dan Wetzel. He's a nice guy. But if you read Dan Wetzel's article on Saturday night, I guess, or filed it maybe Sunday morning about how the future is now – and Rory McIlroy didn't even notice Tiger Woods muttering to himself. Dan Wetzel wrote something to the extent of, I almost felt bad for Tiger. It was almost depressing to watch. Basically writing off Tiger Woods that he will never win another golf tournament again, and Rory McIlroy is riding it on his horse. This is the peril of writing the game story after the third quarter. There is another round. It's a four-round tournament. You would think better of that. It's Tiger Woods. He was four shots, or even seven shots back. He's Tiger freaking Woods. And Rory McIlroy has won nothing. Two tournaments in his life. No majors. It was amazing to me. And look, Wetzel wasn't the only one. That was just the most egregious. I can't believe that so many columnists write the game story after the third quarter.
I don't understand why people are talking about how likable or unlikable Tiger Woods is. Because I don't care. There was I didn't catch the interview after Tiger's round where he was supposed
to. Fine.
It's not. Yeah. So what? You know what? He just worked his ass off for 4 days, probably pissed away the tournament when he missed that putt on 15. Why the fuck should he be in a good mood?
But all he said, Bill McAtee asked him, "What are you going to do? You're going to go to the range? You're going to go get something to eat?" And he goes, "I'm starving. I'm going to get something to eat." Like, I mean, he did the interview.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. Nothing. People were looking for something there. Nothing.
Could have had a sandwich waiting for him. You know. What's wrong with that? Give the guy a banana. He's probably low on potassium. But no, he's got to be an asshole because he doesn't want to be overly accommodating after he just pissed away his, what would that have been, his fifth green jacket?
Something like that.
I'd be in a bad mood too.
So are you going to miss this? Are you still doing your show? I mean, you're just done. You're not doing your show anymore?
Here's what I'm doing. I'm still doing my show. All right. We took like a month off because I was out of town for some really neat opportunities that came up in front of me. I got to meet Bill Walton. I met Greg Anthony. Met Larry Fitzgerald. Did some really neat stuff up in New York and was gone for that. And then I spent a weekend in Atlanta with my wife signing a lease and all that stuff. But we're still doing the podcast. We're going to do the podcast every week. I actually am working on a short film. It's going to be an animated short that I'm submitting into a film competition in Atlanta. I'm not going to tell you much about it now, except that it's not going to have anything to do with sports. But that's going to be like a full-time role for probably the next month, 6 weeks or so.
Wow.
And then after that, it's going to be either another website or possibly a book. But, I'm going to do the short. The film has always been on like my bucket list, and I've been so angry with myself that I have not devoted significant time to even getting this thing started. But I feel like what we have now is a good concept, and then I'm outlining it, and I'm finishing up the first draft right now. And I'm pretty jazzed about it. So I'm going to do that, and then after that, it's going to be come what may. But, I'm still going to be around it with Leather. I'm still going to be around KSK. I'm not leaving the web entirely. You know, I'm still going to be tweeting and still doing the podcast, so you'll be able to find me.
You're welcome to come on You are not welcome to come on this show. Maybe I can come on your show.
You can come on our show. You can come on our show anytime. I still think we should do another show. We could do like a 30-minute weekend recap, just like we're doing now. And then we could alternate hosting. I could be like, Dan, what do you think? And then next week you could be like, Josh, what do you think?
We could do like they do in college baseball where they alternate half innings, where you'd be the color analyst and then I'd do the play-by-play and then we'd switch every half inning.
Yeah, the Reds do that. Marty Brenneman and Jeff Brantley, I think, is the new guy now. The new guy they got for Nuxhall. Nuxhall is awesome. He was awesome, but like he was no Marty Brenneman, but he was lovable in his own way. That's what I'd be. I'd be like the cranky guy who can't keep track of balls and strikes, and then you could be the more eloquent voice, sort of pacing the action. That can happen.
I think we just got called strike three. Bethlehem Scholes is next. I thank you for your time, sir.
Thanks, Dan. We'll do it again soon.
It's part two of Quit Week, this time with Bethlehem Scholes. How are you, sir?
I'm okay. Am I really quitting? Is that the word for it?
No, you're actually not, and that's what I want to get into. And by the way, Mazel Tov, you have, according to the New York Times, you have a new edition on the way.
Yeah, we figured we've been kind of you know, being selective with it. Well, both because, you know, you don't want to jump the gun until it's time to jump the gun. And then also for well, other reasons that have to do with things, people who aren't me. But, yeah, then we decided that was just too good an opportunity to pass up because...
Oh, yeah. That, yeah, keep that clip. Hey, look, yeah. you were announced in the New York Times. All right, so here's the thing. Free Darko is shutting down. You mentioned this on Friday, and of course I write back because everything has to be about me. Thanks for giving me the week, fuckers. You and Zirkle make these. With Leather is changing leadership, and Free Darko is closing down. Nobody gives a crap about my show anymore. But I think of the three, yours, if we were going to throw rocks into a lake, yours has this enormous ripple effect. But as you and I talked about, nothing's really changing. Because you've always said nobody really reads the site, right?
Well, okay, a couple things. I actually announced it. You there?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
Okay, so it's weird. I actually announced it during during one of the over the weekend, I think. Wait a minute. What week is it? No, I actually announced it last weekend.
Okay.
And then this just shows you how poorly Twitter works. Like, I announced it during one of the games, and then some people sort of heard it. But I said, okay, well, I just want to get that out there, at least so when I, like, announce it on with a post on, you know, on tomorrow being the, what's the date?
Oh, you mean tomorrow, actually, like, tomorrow?
Yeah, like, when I...
So yeah, the 11th, but, April 11th, which would be right, today for people listening in Space Time Continuum.
I what I didn't want to do was just like sort of drop that out of nowhere. So I put it out on Twitter and some people saw it. And then apparently, though, not that many people saw it, because then when I mentioned it in like a Tumblr post, all of a sudden people were like, what? It's ending? So then I had to say, yes, as I said, you know, tried to say last week. And then people kept asking me again, like, the next day, and then I clarified, like, yes, it is, and, you know, it's just Twitter, you miss it, and...
Right, no, yeah, it goes in and out, and yeah, you're right, if you miss it. But I think it made pretty big waves in my follower world. I mean, there were 30 or 40 people, I think, who were talking about it, which doesn't seem like a lot, but when you have thousands of followers for each, it sort of resonates a little bit. On Friday afternoon, when you mentioned, we will have a last post, or maybe it was this weekend, we will have a last post on Monday, but that's going to be the end. And everyone looked around like, wait a minute. But for you, it's different than for me, and it's different than for Zirkle to some extent, because this actually frees you up to do more. This isn't the end of you. This is actually sort of a new beginning.
Yeah, that's a very inspirational way of putting it. And also, too, I mean, frankly, like, the site, it hasn't been nearly as active, you know, as over the last couple, over like the last year or so as it's been in the past. I mean, it just seems like the right time to put the thing to bed, you know? I'm not going to stop writing, and I don't think anyone else who's ever written for the site is going to disappear altogether from public consciousness. So, yeah, this is what's been interesting about it for me, though, is that I kind of was just thinking, oh, I'll just say no more posts. And then all of a sudden someone pointed out to me that a lot of people probably would just feel kind of like cheated and annoyed if I just sort of anticlimactically did like a hipster runoff and just said, all right, guys, no more posts, bye. Because, you know, there is like a certain amount of investment, admittedly, on my part too, in that site and that silly template and all this stuff. So even though my heart will go on, it is, you know, as an institution, it will no longer exist, which...
How does that work with everybody else? Because as you said, everyone else is still going to be around, but not necessarily. And I don't mean to sound like the little guy, but you've had a lot of people as part of the books. You've had a lot of people contribute to the site. That was their voice. You developed your own voice out of that. But some of the guys, that's all they had. So are they going to still be around, or where's everybody else going?
Well, I mean, I think the thing is too, you know, there have been a lot of people who wrote for the site, you know, not just like the people, the core people or the people who worked in the books. There've also been like all these other people who wrote for the site. And I think, you know, it's like, let me backtrack. The people who are associated with the site, I'm sure if they wanted to continue writing and write other places, they could get, you know, their emails returned.
Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, so to that extent, it's not as if like I'm like leaving, you know, a bunch of people high and dry career wise, you know, like Adam or Todd or whoever, like they could say hi, you know, because people who've written like one or two posts for Free Darko can you know, sometimes get someone's attention just by saying they've written for Free Darko. So I think to that extent, anyone who's like worked on two books doesn't need to worry about whether or not. And also, again, like, it's not like any of us were really writing all that frequently anyway for the blog itself.
Yeah. And that's, so, I think that's the biggest point that, I mean, it, as I said, it sort of reverberates throughout, but you look at, and you and I had this conversation when the whole AOL thing went down, and I said, why don't you turn Free Darko into more of an overall encompassing basketball blog? And you said, that's not what it is. And you said, by the way, we don't have as many people watching as you guys were in a way, the great band that everyone loved, but not everyone bought their newest albums. That we always loved the albums from 2-3 years ago, but the album now, it's like, oh, that band's so great. Nah, I'm not buying the new one. Did you ever feel that way?
Well, yeah, to some extent, but I also think that one thing I never was really aware of until recently was just how many people read the site through RSS feeds.
Oh yeah.
Because we at some point changed our RSS feed so you actually got the full text instead of just a preview. And I should probably now go back and change every remark I've ever made about our traffic, because we actually had about 5 times as much traffic as I thought all along. At least if you assume someone with Free Darko and an RSS feed, a site that doesn't like produce content all that often, is probably going to click on it when a post comes up, you know, once every 3 days or something.
Right.
So to that, but still, yeah, I mean, relative to like, you know, the actual amount of traffic you need for something to be a traffic sustained, or click sustained, business. No, we certainly were never there, but that said too, I mean, the posts we're doing for today,
Monday, whatever.
For Monday, it's just basically everyone we could get to who has written for the site at some point, just sort of saying what it meant to them. And it's probably because I don't really, you know, there's this whole use of Free Darko as an adjective. I never really understood what that meant. So I was always trying to get people to tell me, and everyone seemed to have their own different version of it. But then that just sort of turns, when people start talking about that, into what the site meant. And that's sort of when I started to realize how much of a dick move it would have been for me to just say, okay, no more Free Darko, because it, and not give people a chance to sort of, you know, process that, because I think it did accomplish something. I think it accomplished very different things for different people, you know, both like professionally and also just in terms of what they thought it meant. But we're putting up this mammoth post tomorrow that I have to spend the rest of the night editing. That's essentially, you know, 25-30 people all saying 1-3 paragraphs of it's not really supposed to be like it'll have a lot of links, so it's like sort of a greatest hits post, but at the same time, you know, there's that New York Times interview. I figured that was like a nice capsule, like bye-bye high profile thing. I mean, this is more just sort of for everyone who made the site what it was,
right,
to talk about what they felt they were contributing to. And that's ultimately, again, why it would have been so unfair of me to just turn it off because I wasn't using it anymore.
Look, and the ironic thing for me, thinking about you guys, is that it was born out of the internet, but made cool through books. And as somebody who has been in print design for as long as I have and then went to the internet, I respect the shit out of that, because I think that you guys made buying books cool. Other people make buying books informative or necessary, or, you know, but your books are cool. And there's an inherent uncoolness, unhipness about a book. It's clunky, it's heavy, but it's not for you. You guys made coffee table books out of basketball. And that was the most incredible thing, that a bunch of guys who got together on the internet, where that was the cool place. The internet was supposed to be the cool place. You guys were like, no, that's not cool. Here's a book that you can keep forever. And that's what I will always respect about the way you guys did what you do.
Well, hopefully my career will continue in that vein, because especially with a lockout coming, it seems like my best move is to start trying to finish up this proposal for the like solo book I'm trying to do, which will probably not be as cool, because it is not going to be a Free Darko book with tons of illustrations and graphs. It will just be a book.
Lame.
Yeah. I mean, all I'm doing is writing about athletes whose careers ended abruptly and tragically, and using a Leonard Cohen song as the structure. It's just some typical, you know, boring sports shit.
But, by the way, how? I mean, look, I was in a very, very eerily, except for the success and the books and everything, similar situation to you in that the blog I worked for blew everybody up, fired everyone, and I had a kid on the way. And I had said to my wife, trust me, the only way I'm getting fired from Sporting News is if they blow up their blogs. That was an actual conversation that I had. I will never get fired from there because I am one of the best writers they have, and everybody who's an editor loves me. The only way that I won't have this job next year is if they blow up the blog. Do you feel that way? I mean, you're a freelance writer. Obviously, you have a name. Obviously, you've written everywhere. You have these books. You're doing another book pitch. Is there something in the back of your head? And I know you are like me in the sense that you analyze and overthink everything. Are you concerned at all? Is your family concerned at all? I mean, you are a freelancer now. You don't have a safety net. Is that scary or is that something that you're looking forward to?
I'm not looking forward to it. I mean, there was that thing on the All the other day that said, if you're a freelancer that's too heavily leveraged in one, you know, contract job or one month-to-month big job, like, you should diversify because you never know what's going to happen. Of course, that's easier said than done. I mean, no, I'm not. You suddenly asked me a very serious question. I mean, look, I'm doing some stuff that is, oh man.
Just answer it. I mean, say it how you need to say it.
No, I'm scared shitless. Like I'm going to run out of money and like, I'm going to run out of money like the day the baby's born. And my wife's a grad student who is going to, you know, only, you know, she's not going to have, basically, yeah, we're going to be dead broke the day the baby's born.
Right. Which by the way,
let's say I get a book deal before then.
I'll say this, but I'll let you off the hook a little bit. I will say this because you and I have had a very frank discussion when the whole AOL thing went down, and I wish I was taping it, but I'm glad for both of our sakes that we weren't. And you basically said the same thing to me. You know, I'd love to write for the site that I'm, you know, or I'd love to write for other sites, but I need to worry about making money. And Zirkle and I talked about this a couple of minutes ago, but it's a weird difference for all of us than it was 5, 6, 7 years ago, where now you either need to make money or you can't do it. There is no, well, I have a day job and then I come home and write. For most of us, you either invest yourself in the writing, in the work, or you go do something else, and you can't do both anymore. It's almost like with kids and stuff, and you'll learn that, like, it just got too crowded. There's not enough time in the day, and if somebody's not going to pay you, you almost can't give away your work for free anymore. As much as I'm the one who says, young kids, people who are trying to get in this business, do everything you can for free to get your name on it. I would not have had any of the stuff I had if it wasn't for the stuff I did at Washington Post or the stuff I did even for the 700 level, which I all did for free. But the problem is I think all those doors have closed now. If you can't get a paying gig, you're never going to get a paying gig. It almost feels that way.
Well, and at the same time, too, it's like there's also a very finite amount of money to go around. And, you know, I would love it if someone would give me a full-time gig. And, you know, I know, you know, there are editors who like my writing, but there's, you know, there's only so much money to be spent on, you know, people writing about basketball on the internet. Yeah. So, and a lot, you know, and not saying, and, you know, a lot of it is very well accounted for already. And that's sort of the weird thing about the AOL thing is you basically had this thing where everyone or most of the people there, everyone agreed they should have a job. And then all of a sudden the employer disappears and it's not like you can suddenly then – it's not like there are other people to fire other places to make room for
exactly.
AOL. You know, that's – like there are good writers out there. You know, there's the problem is that there's a shortage of money to pay writers, not that there's like some sort of like gross miscalculation about who's being paid, you know, the limited money that's available. I also want to say that, you know, it's not like I'm not going to, you know, it's more like I did the Bonds trial for the Daily. That was a lot of fun. I'm going to be doing a playoff blog on GQ with David Roth. That'll be really good. It's just more that, you know, again, I would like that check every month.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah. I mean, and also, unlike you, I have absolutely no other skills. No, I mean, I'm serious. Like, I was actually thinking of writing something about how I literally did not know how to get a job. Like, I thankfully started dressing a little bit more like an adult recently, so I can, you know, but that was also partly just because I was going to things and I would be around, you know, media and I would look like I was a homeless person and I realized I probably should, like, you know, make sure there wasn't a hole in my shirt when I went to go cover a game. But, you know, it's, I mean, I don't know, like, I can't, you know, I just don't. That's why, as dumb as it sounds and as sort of like arrogant as it sounds, I just need to get myself another book deal, and I think it's a good idea. And a lot of people I've talked to seem to like the idea, but it's just like I can't do anything else. I would have to, and it's, you know, especially in this job market, you're not learning how to do anything else like on the fly right now. You know, no one's going to be like, oh, you seem to be a. We'll take a risk on you because you ran this incredibly weird basketball blog for a while and published 2 books. Why don't you come, you know, help write marketing copy for, you know what I mean?
It's yeah, like, but here's the question for you then. Which is better, being great as I feel you are at what you do, or being pretty good to really good at like 10 things? Because I compare you to me in a sense, which is not really fair, but like I think I'm a better writer than most people. I don't think I'm anywhere near the best writer out there. I think I am probably as good an editor as anybody out there, but I'm not the best editor out there. I made my living on graphic design, but I sort of hate it now as much as I do it every day to keep food coming to the table. I hate it, and I don't want to do it anymore. And I don't feel like I'm anywhere near as good as some of the other stuff out there. So which is better, being great at one thing but feeling pigeonholed, or being not good enough to get any jobs because you're good at 6 things and not great at one of them?
I should back up. I mean, like, I consider myself a very good editor. Like, I did a lot of editing, you know, over the course of Free Darko, like, between, like, the books and, you know, like, you know, working with people on posts and guest posts.
But writing, I mean, it's hand in hand.
Right, yeah. So I mean, it's not because, well, now I almost made it sound like I'm like this like savant who, but it is, you know, I thought you were going to go with that was to some degree, I really only can write the way I write about basketball. I mean, I had lunch with, was it lunch or brunch, whatever. Kevin Pelton and I were in Portland for the Hoop Summit, and we went out this morning for brunch or something. And I said to Kevin, you know, like, I think I could realistically start writing about football this season. If there were, you know what I mean? Like I, you know, I watch football. I have like a, but it's like, I could not, it wouldn't be the same. And, you know, it wouldn't approach anything near the kind of thing I'm, because I also wouldn't even just know what I was trying to do with it the way I, because I used to try and write about football, and people would just say to me things like, you just don't understand football.
Right.
And I think that's the difference. It's like, the only reason I write about basketball is because there's something about it that resonates with me that makes me want to write about it. I mean, I'm feeling that like increasingly with older baseball. I mean, there's going to be, the new book's going to be not just basketball players. And, you know, I'm thinking a lot about the baseball of, you know, generations past, which is actually the sport I was into before anything else. And I mean, that's the thing that's beginning to, you know, I'm starting to realize how and why that excites me. But it's like, that there is that sort of writing wise, I have that like savant like dilemma. Cause I mean, like, you can't, I don't really know how to do my thing, quote unquote, about other things. It's kind of like, you know, in a weird way, it's like you wouldn't ask a movie critic to review a record,
right?
And expect it. And weirdly, I think sports kind of are like that. I mean, if you really, you know, guys who are really passionate about a sport, you know, they have a very unique relationship with that. At least if they're passionate about several sports, they have a very different relationship with every other sport. And the truth is, the only relationship I really have is with basketball and pro basketball of that. Though I did watch most of March Madness this year.
I don't have any idea how to end this conversation, but all I know is I don't want to stop talking to you. I don't want to stop talking to Zirkle. I want to, like, my biggest fear to lay on a couch and let you actually be my analyst for a second is that I'm not going to talk to you guys anymore. Like, would it be all right if I just called you every couple of weeks and just we spent 20 minutes on the phone? I mean, I'm serious. Like, that's my biggest fear. I have built a network of people I trust, of people I care about, not just from a work standpoint, but from a well-being standpoint. You know, like, there are friends, people, I mean, I don't see you guys all the time, but people I consider friends enough that I care about what happens in your life more than just your job. I feel like I'm going to lose that. I feel like it's just not going to be around anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, this is sort of, I guess, where, you know, to me, I guess, I don't know. I don't see any particular venture as being what defines a network or what allows for a network, you know?
I hope so. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, it's like, you know, okay, there are people that I work with today well that I don't talk to as much now, but I still talk to them, you know. It's, and I think there's also just given how, like, you know, fluid and ever shifting and blah, 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 all this stuff is, you know, you can never really fall out of touch with people because you never know when all of a sudden, you know, they're going to be relevant in your life professionally again, you know? So that's, I think, just the idea that that would be, I think if anything, like, the fact that that could sneak up on you again like that is actually just one more reason to not even think that it has to spell the doom of, you know, some sort of relationship. That didn't make any sense.
No, I know what you mean. It's weird because I guess I'm just thinking out loud in the sense that 10 minutes ago I told Zirkle, or 20 minutes ago I told Zirkle, that I sort of am looking forward to unplugging for a while, and now I'm telling you that I feel like I'm going to lose my friends. This is just a weird week. I'm going to miss it. I mean, look, I mean, I'll, you know this. I'm not the hugest NBA guy. I have read your site. I don't understand half of what you guys say from a basketball construct because you're thinking on six levels higher than me about the sport. I appreciate the writing. I appreciate the quality of it. And I can speak for everyone on the internet that I will miss that. That being said, at least from you and from the other people, the quality of writing is going to be there somewhere else. It's just going to be a little bit harder to find and maybe not about the same stuff.
Right. And I'm not going to disappear, you know, from your Skype window or anything.
Right. Like,
right. God, I feel like this ended up being a lot more like me worrying about my future than I really thought it was going to be.
It's what we do, man. I'm like Barbara Walters of Sports Block. I'm like the Roy Firestone. No.
I just know because also that New York Times thing was typing, which makes it a lot easier for me to, you know, be composed. But I, you know, it's like I just have to sound very professional and calm and confident about this. Whereas now I'm like, of course, you could ask me, like, by the way, how are you gonna? Like, I don't think you're, huh?
How are you gonna survive?
I don't think you're. Well, I mean, that's the thing too. Is like, Free Darko has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not I have money in the bank to raise a kid. I mean, Free Darko, like, the store makes money and I get a cut of that, but you know, it's not. You know, it was never a money making venture for me in any way.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, it was a great platform, and certainly, you know, its reputation allowed me to get a lot of work and allowed me to get, you know, these books out and stuff. But it's not as if, like, it's weird because it's not really like, you know, if we get down to it, and, you know, our professional lives are really just about making money. I mean, this really doesn't change. It changes absolutely nothing for me.
No, right. I think that question was more based on the AOL situation than on the Free Darko situation. But it is weird. Look, I'll be honest. I mean, everything sort of times itself out, and I think you're doing the right thing. Personally, I mean, you know, as much as it sucks for the sake of the internet, so to speak, I think you're doing the right thing. You consolidate, you do what you can to provide and to succeed. And I think, look, if somebody is smart out there, and somebody listening to this is smart out there, you're going to end up with a good gig. I'm going to end up with a good gig. Zirkle's going to end up with a good gig. And if some of us end up at the same place, that person is really, really smart. And there's other people out there, too. I'm just naming us because we're the three on this show right now. There are other people out there. Half of the people who used to work with at AOL. I mean, there are people out there. If you could pick out the really smart people out there, you'd have one hell of a website. Bill Simmons, I'm talking to you. Or maybe not him. Anyway, you should be working at that site if you would go back and do stuff with ESPN. I will say that publicly.
No, I mean, it's...
All right, I just gave away something.
What?
I feel like I've given something away that shouldn't have been given away.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, no, I would, be, you know, based on who he seems to be hiring, yes, I would be thrilled to work for that site. I mean, 30 for 30, I think, is a perfect example of, like, you know, the fact that he has extremely good taste when it comes to getting people to work on his projects and do what they do well. So, sure, I mean, that would be great.
By the way, and I say this with full disclosure, I have no clue if Bill Simmons has ever listened to the show or even knows who I am. He has written me back in an email, so I think he knows who I am. But I don't know if he ever listened to the show before. And I hope, just because of this last comment, if he listens to this whole show, I hope that happens. Or something happens. Because you deserve that. And I thank you for your time. I don't want to hold you any longer than you have to, because then you have to edit a 70,000 paragraph post for Monday. But honestly, thank you. Just for, you know, thank you for making me feel a little bit more sane.
Likewise. Wow, that's a weird thing to respond to.
All right, let me stop this now. We will, by the way, for anyone listening, we will still have a show tomorrow. There'll be three shows after this. I thank everybody for listening. And that's all we got today. We're going to stop and probably talk for 5 more minutes.